Now, let's get back to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us for this last half of Let's Face the Issues today. We're interviewing Congressman John Rutherford, our 4th District Representative for the U.S. House of Representatives, and I'm thankful that he's here today. And the dialogue and discussion thus far, we've talked about the hoax trial that's taking place, the impeachment of President Donald J. Trump, and we've gotten into the subject of the guns and the gun rights and the infringement on the Second Amendment right, as we see trying to take place with Governor Northam in Virginia. And I'm thankful to say, ladies and gentlemen, perhaps you're aware of this, but there's 133 counties in Virginia, and over 100 of those counties, the elected sheriffs in those counties, the constitutionally elected sheriffs, have said that they would not enforce any law that will confiscate weapons from their citizens that were the legal owners of weapons. And I believe our caller is still on the line. We're discussing that. What further questions or comments do you have in relationship to what we were saying before the break?
Well, I believe our representative was filling us in.
Yeah. So what do we need to be concerned about? And I will tell you, and this goes back to the issue I was talking about before about scoring bills and just accepting somebody else's interpretation of it. You know, Democrats put on the floor H.R. 8, which they touted as a background check bill. You know, we just want to do background checks, make sure everybody has their background check, which who's against people getting a background check? Yeah, that's okay. But if you read the bill, what it says is, if I'm going to buy Dr. Youngblood's gun, him and I would have to go to an FFL dealer.
Yes.
And I would get my background check run, and he would hand his gun over to that FFL dealer, and it would be sold to me as though it were his stock, the FFL dealer's stock. Now, people that don't know the system may not understand. Nowhere in that bill, H.R. 8, was a national gun registration bill is what it was.
Yes.
Although nowhere in that bill does it say gun registration. But the act of forcing every sale to go through an FFL dealer as though it's his stock means every firearm in this gun would be registered through those FFL dealers at that point
of
sale.
That was intent.
And that's why I voted against it.
Yes.
Those are the kind of things that we have to be careful of. It's the application of the law that becomes concerning for me. And let me tell you, and I will admit, I started off when I first heard about these red flag laws, you know, and these special orders of protection that would go out and take guns from people who were, a known danger. At first, I thought, you know, that might not be a bad idea because, as a police officer, we take guns from people all the time when they break the law. So I had a conversation with a gentleman back here in Duval, and we talked several times about it, went to lunch a couple times, talked about it, and he was adamantly opposed to it. But what finally won me over in opposition to these red flag laws was when he sent me a thick, I don't know how many different stories there were, articles of the application of red flag laws.
Yes.
And the lack of due process that was involved in the horrific circumstances under which someone's guns were being taken. And so I'm now adamantly opposed to red flag laws. I think this whole situation, if you put it in the context of what we just saw happen with the president, and we see happening now with the president. Look, we understand, I think everybody understands now that Lois Lerner weaponized the IRS against conservative groups.
Right.
We all understand that. We all recognize that. What I understand now is, and I never thought I would say this in my life, I mean, I love the FBI. I'm an FBI National Academy graduate.
Yes.
But I understand now that a cabal, not the men and women on the street who are doing the job every day, not the real FBI, but their leadership.
Hierarchy.
A small cabal at the top that was placed there under the Obama administration, mm-hmm. the top of the FBI, top of the AG's office, top of the intelligence agencies. Clapper, Brennan, Comey, Bruce Orr over in the AG's, Loretta Lynch.
Yes.
This group, not only did Lois Lerner weaponize the IRS, but every one of those individuals I just named, I believe, weaponized their federal agency against this president.
Absolutely.
So what, now,
some are calling it a soft coup.
So now to give them the right to go out and seize people's guns? No, absolutely not.
I agree with that.
What you've just identified from my perspective is poison pills that you find in legislation. And there may be a 20-page or 200-page piece of legislation that, you know, 199 pages looks good, but then you have that poison pill that absolutely will be destructive and rot the core,
that
undermine
is,
the core of the Constitution. So
that's absolutely correct. And so let me give you another good example of this. And I was reading an article in Politico and it was an interview of a new member in Congress. Her name is Abigail. Her last name will come to me in a minute. Pardon me? Spanberger. Yes, Spanberger. Abigail Spanberger. She's being interviewed by Politico. And she talks about, look, we had a bipartisan bill come out of Energy and Commerce. Bipartisan bill, Republicans and Democrats supporting this bill to lower the cost of prescription meds. Everybody agreed. H.R. 19. H.R. 19 gets the Speaker, Pelosi. She tables that bill. She pulls out H.R. 3, which is her bill. She puts it on the floor. It's a price control bill. At some point, if in the negotiations, if CMS and others can't agree with the drug company, that drug company can be fined up to eventually 95% of the revenue made on that drug. It's crazy. They knew there was not a single Republican in that House that was going to vote for that, but they have the majority. So she puts it on the floor. She forces her people to vote for it. It passes. Now it's sitting over in the Senate. Now, what that bill would do essentially is drive all of the private equity money out of
pharmaceuticals,
which means
any new R&D would go by the wayside. We wouldn't see any new medicine if you have
exactly
the
exactly. In fact, the OMB, because they use a mathematical formula to come up with how much money gets put in and how many cures are found, said that over the next 10 years, 15, somewhere between 15 and 100. That's pretty big spread, obviously, but
yeah,
cures would not be found because of this bill. And so Abigail said, you know, because they asked her, they said, well, why would she do that? She said, look, the reason she tabled our bill and put hers forward is because she knows our bill's not going anywhere. She doesn't want President Trump to get credit for lowering prescription drug costs in this country.
That's key to it.
So they literally hate this president more than they love the country. Literally. And so they are willing to put all these bills forward with poison pills in them, as you say, and then they go sit in the Senate. In fact, I hear these Democrat supporters saying all the time now, well, we're not a do-nothing. It's not the Democrats aren't a do-nothing Congress. There's 400 bills sitting in the Senate. Yes, and every single one of them has a poison pill in it. Tell me this. How many bipartisan bills are sitting in the Senate?
Zip.
Not a one.
Not a one.
Not
That's
a
right.
one.
Zip.
Very good point. I would love it, and I know this is probably asking a lot. I would love it if you would, as you see poison pills, identify them clearly, concisely, and have your staff put them on your website. Identify the bill number and then the poison pill within the bill. Because the average citizen, they get told, especially these Never-Trumpers out here, they'll say, you know, Donald Trump was funded Planned Parenthood year after year, funded them more than has ever been funded before. They don't realize that that's, you know, part of a continuing resolution that was signed in order to fund the government, and it was was either we go into government shutdown mode and everybody blames Trump, your CNN types, your MSNBC types, or whatever, or you sign the continuing resolution, which is disgusting. We never returned to regular order as we were supposed to under Ryan. And, you know, we have this continuing, you know, we hundreds and hundreds of pages of continuing resolutions and omnibus spending agreements rather than regular order. But if you identify those poison pills, clearly.
Yeah, we'll put some. Yeah, that's a good idea. We'll put some of those out on you know, major legislation so people understand, you know, exactly what the problems are.
Yes, absolutely.
Right. Well, I say that because there are folks, just like they're slamming Donald Trump, they're slamming John Rutherford sometimes, and you go, I know him. I know John Rutherford, and he would not have voted against that because it's a good bill, or would not have voted for that knowing it's a bad bill, except for the fact that these little things are hidden. They're tucked away, and if they're articulated, then, quite frankly, I'm going to rob them from your side. I'm going to copy and paste if you'll give me permission. I'll throw those in as retort and response many times to these Never Johns out there. I mean, we know there are a few of those, and we're thankful for you. We're thankful for the work you do. We thank you for your many years of toting a gun and a badge for our community and standing tall for constitutional principles. I was glad to see that I forget what we called the group that wanted at the federal level come in and have the basically stop and search kind of things. And you said no as a constitutional officer there.
The Viper teams.
What was that called?
Viper, Visible Intermodal Viper Protection and Emergency Response. Yeah, right. that was Homeland.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and it is wonderful to me to see individuals that have the backbone fortitude that you do and have shown by word and deed in those particular instances. And I challenge you to encourage constitutional officers across the United States, these sheriffs across the United States, to stand up for constitutional principles. That's where your
absolutely.
That's where it is. And really, I'm thankful for you, and I encourage you to keep up the good work.
Yeah. Hey, well, listen, I made it very clear when I was sheriff that I would never allow my agency to be part of violating the United States Constitution and taking people's guns away illegally. Was not about to happen, and I wasn't going to allow those Viper teams to violate their Fourth Amendment rights to be free of illegal searches and seizures either. That was a horrible idea that they were professing. And I really appreciate that support, and I appreciate the idea.
Very good. Thank you so much for joining us today on the broadcast. I've got an article titled, Congressman says, Trump speaks out on Virginia gun rally. He says, Democrats are working hard to take away your Second Amendment rights. And I believe that capitalizes that whole subject in that realm.
Yeah, I believe they are, too.
The socialist Marxist Democrats. In fact, I don't know if you're aware of it or not, but right here in the state of Florida, we have over 40 gun bills that's working the way through the House and the Senate as we speak. One of them is the expansion of the red flag laws that will allow anybody, whether it be police officer, family member, someone that hates you, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, mm-hmm. to call in anonymously and have the law enforcement to come and take your weapon.
That should never be allowed.
That should never be allowed.
That should never
and
be
the,
allowed.
And I believe the law and the on the national level, I believe we've got 17 states that have instituted that red flag law. And supposedly you've got 14 days to be able to appeal and get your weapon back.
Right.
There's one case now, I believe it's in New Jersey, where the man has been fighting to get his weapon back for almost 18 mm-hmm. months and cannot do so.
See, those are the cases, Doctor, that I read that were provided to me by a local constituent.
Yes. And right now,
I've never seen them.
Right now,
he provides that to me.
Yes.
And I immediately after see, it's always in the application.
Yes. The enforcement of the application.
Exactly.
What's called enabling legislation that puts it forward.
That was not.
Right now, because they've expanded that law so broadly in Colorado, a 19-year-old lad was shot by a police officer because in 2 minutes, the police officer said, put the knife down 36 times. And finally rushed the officer, and it's on video. The officer shot him, and now the boy's mother, the young lad's mother, is now, through the expanded red flag laws in Colorado, trying to enforce the law enforcement officers to have his guns removed. That's how broad it is in Colorado with the red flag law. And that's being battled out as we speak. Let's take a moment and switch gears and go back to the thought. Tell us in a brief few moments where you think it is going in relationship to the Senate and what the Senate is doing and how that's going to come out with the impeachment.
Well, having heard a little bit today, I've been out and about, but I've picked up a little bit of it. I think what they're going to move forward and try to do is deny it on its face. It's kind of like a judge, offering summary judgment.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and not got a case, we're throwing it out of court.
I think that's going to be it. I think he's going to look at the filing document, the articles of impeachment, and say there's nothing here that is a crime, so it certainly cannot rise to a high crime or misdemeanor.
Right.
And therefore, there is no case.
I'm glad to see him having Alan Dershowitz on that team because he has adamantly said that what they're trying to do is totally unconstitutional.
And, Doctor, I'm going to tell you why I think it's important that they do it that way as opposed to a trial. Mm-hmm. Look, if the Democrats are allowed to get away with this, we will see nothing but impeachments against presidents when you have a separate House in a separate White, from the White House.
That's right. It sets the precedent, so it would be very, very dangerous.
It sets a precedent that is horrible.
Yes. There
truly is, a constitutional crisis here.
Yes,
absolutely. And the Democrats have created it.
Absolutely.
In fact, Professor Turley made it clear to Congress, the House, they said, there will be an abuse of power.
And it will be by the...
But it will be by you.
By the Democrats, yes.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Congressman, just recently, the president issued directive to the U.S. Department of Education through Betsy DeVos. And that directive was that she is to put on notice all of the public educational systems in America that it will allow students to pray in school. What are your thoughts on that? Is it good? Is it bad? Where is it going? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. It sounds good on its face. To allow it is one thing. To require it is something else.
Yes.
I think it should be allowed.
Well, that's the whole point.
It is allowed. I mean, it is
if
allowed
it is.
Now because if I'm sitting at my desk, I can pray anytime I want.
Well, the major thing is if it is instituted by the students, it is allowed even today. But across the nation, and I've done some pretty deep research on that, across the nation, the overwhelming majority of our public schools, the teachers, the administrators, the superintendents of the schools believe that it is federally illegal if you're on federal property to stand
to
and pray
prayer.
Or to be heard, especially if it's in Jesus' name.
Yeah.
And so for that reason, I'm thankful that he's taken that stand.
Yeah.
And it's my prayer that it does not get in some way entangled with some other issues that could be dangerous where some would try to enforce it. But I'm thankful that that's taking place because it's taken us back to some roots. I'm still less than 100 years old, and I can recall when I was in public school that we had Bible reading every morning. Students were required to memorize a scripture verse and repeat it in the classroom, pledge to the flag, and pray, and you prayed in Jesus' name.
Yeah.
And as I've said, I grew up in the country, and in the country we had horse shows that didn't make the donkeys angry. But we're not finding that today
in the
system that we're in. But I am thankful for that stand, and it's my prayer that you will stand for us on those issues in Washington. I understand that there's been a spat between what you've said about our Islamic jihadist representatives and their response to it.
Yes, let me tell you what happened on that. And I, look, the people in Jacksonville, particularly Northeast Florida, they know me.
Yes.
They know I'm not a flamethrower. I'm not a bomb thrower.
Certainly not a racist.
But in this case, what happened? That we held a joint briefing of the Democrats and Republicans jointly together. We had the same briefing from Secretary Esper, Secretary Miley, the whole group, intelligence, everybody, to explain to us, this was 2 days after we killed the number one terrorist from Iran,
Soleimani.
And they're giving us a briefing to explain why they, you know, why President Trump gave that order. Now, I believe just the fact that Soleimani is living and breathing, he's an imminent threat to American soldiers.
Absolutely.
Because he's killed hundreds of them.
Yes.
Over 600, we know.
And maimed thousands.
Exactly. So he's an imminent threat just because he's living and breathing. But in that meeting, they didn't give us the specific target, the specific date and time. They did at one point talk about a range of time. But it was very clear to everybody in that room that there was an immediate threat to our men and women in the field in uniform.
Yes.
And so we leave that meeting, and Pramila Jayapal and several of her close folks immediately went to a mic and said that President Trump had recklessly assassinated General Soleimani, and that there was no imminent threat. No imminent threat given, which was absolutely a lie. So I immediately, and I probably should have waited, but I sent off a tweet. You know, never tweet when you're mad, by the way. That's the first. But I was angry that they were giving propaganda talking points to our enemy, mm-hmm. Iran, who have killed hundreds of American soldiers. Well, we still have men and women there on the battlefield.
That's right.
And so I tweeted back something to her about, I said, look, I was in the same briefing you were in. You know that's a lie. There was plenty of evidence given for an imminent threat. And the killing, the president was not reckless. Look, the president wasn't reckless.
No.
He, in fact, if you think about it, Doctor, 6 months before that, the Democrats were all over the president because he didn't respond. He didn't respond when they attacked the ships in the Straits of Hormuz.
Right.
He didn't attack when they shot down our drone. Mm-hmm. He didn't attack when they
$250 million drone.
When they fired rockets into the Saudi oil field. He was responding when they burned and attacked our embassy.
Yes.
Okay. And then this terrorist, along with the head of the terrorist organization that has been killing Americans in Lebanon, Syria, all over, we took him out. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't reckless, number one. And number two, it wasn't an assassination. You don't assassinate terrorists, you kill them.
That's right.
And that's what we did. Mm-hmm. But then for her to go to a mic immediately and give that, those propaganda talking points to the Iranians, the Ayatollahs. So I call them Ayatollah sympathizers. Mm-hmm. AOC immediately shot back at me that I was a racist because these are brown women. Mm-hmm. Well, and then I'm in a race. Every congressional member is
right.
Running for reelection right now. And my opponent in this race, Donna Deegan, writes back and accuses me of religious bigotry because I've attacked this woman because of where she's cut from and the color of her skin. And I've called her this Ayatollah sympathizer. Well, what Donna doesn't know is Pramila Jayapal is not Iranian. She's Indian. Mm-hmm. And she's not Muslim. She's Hindu.
Right.
And this had nothing at all to do with race or sex or color of your skin, nothing. It was about the words that they were putting out to aid and comfort our enemy. That's why I probably said, you know, went further than I should have, but I was angry.
You didn't go as far as I would have.
I was just angry.
I'm thankful you've taken that stand. And by the way, I find it fascinating that the drone that took out Soleimani was called the Reaper, and it was 50,000 feet up, and at precision target, we annihilated the situation.
The capabilities are amazing.
That's right, and made us safer
and
as a result.
Untold American lives. We're just safe. Let me tell you what I thought was interesting. Gahani, who took Soleimani's place, once he was appointed to fill that position down back in Iran, the media was interviewing him and he was speaking in English. And I was amazed that he said that they were going to exact their revenge for the death of General Soleimani, and we will continue the struggle until all of the world is under an imam.
Yes.
Nobody said anything about that.
In fact, they make their brags that they're going to have the Islamic flag flying over the White House. That's the goal of Islam.
Nobody even mentioned that.
The Islamic goal is submission. Islam means submit, and it's the goal of submission.
Yeah. I couldn't believe the reporter didn't. I mean, this guy's talking about world domination, and she
not
just
even
lets it go?
No, they circumvent that at all. We've got a couple of minutes left on the broadcast today, Congressman, but you touched on it just a moment ago about your opponent. You're coming up for reelection in November. We're thankful that you're in office. And it's my encouragement to our listeners today that they will listen up, speak up, and be heard at the ballot box and say yes to John Rutherford for 2020 election. But your opponent, I have studied her website pretty thoroughly. Mm-hmm. And she says that because you have called these people racist, her words, not mine, because you've called them racist.
I'm the racist for calling them Ayatollah.
That's right. And that's the reason she's running against you, is because we've got to remove you and President Trump from office to make America safe.
Right. Well, let me tell you, I didn't realize we were so short on time. I want your listeners to go look at Justice Democrats, which Pramila, that's another reason I got so hard on her, because I know she's a Justice Democrat.
Yes.
And I know that AOC, there's 7 Justice Democrats in office. Folks, this country better wake up. You heard AOC today, or yesterday, I guess it was. It was a tape I heard today that there is no left-wing party in America. The Democrat is not a left-wing party. It's a central conservative party. She is the left-wing in her ilk, and that includes Pramila Jayapal.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us today. Let me encourage you to vote, and let me say this very boldly. Vote for John Rutherford. Put him back in office that he can continue to represent us in Washington. Thank you for joining us today. Looking forward to meeting you next time on the air as, once again, we face the issues.
Thank you.
You have been listening to Let's Face the Issues with Dr. Gene A. Youngblood, pastor of First Conservative Baptist Church and president of Conservative Theological University, 12021 Old St. Augustine Road, Jacksonville, Florida, located just 1 mile south of I-295. You are invited to worship with them 9:30 a.m. Sunday for Bible study, 10:45 a.m. Sunday morning worship service, 7 p.m. Sunday evening worship service, or 7 p.m. Wednesday fellowship meal Bible study, prayer, Bible Q&A, and updates on issues facing our city, state, and country. Tune in again for another Let's Face the Issues broadcast. Also tune in the same station Saturday mornings at 9 for expository Bible preaching by Dr. Youngblood. Remember, a rebroadcast of this program can be heard every evening, 9 p.m. on 100.3 FM. Tune in and invite others to listen.